This is Fresh Air. I'm Barbara Bogave in for Terry Gross. Let's continue our Father's Day show with this excerpt from a 1999 interview Terry recorded with André Debuse III. He's been described as a remarkable and distinctive writer, who is the son of a remarkable and distinctive writer. As you may know, Debuse's father, André Debuse Sr., lost one leg and lost all use of the other in a freak car accident in 1986. Terry spoke with Debuse shortly after his father died.
I was very sorry to hear about the death of your father recently. Had he been sick, or was this just an out-of-the-blue thing?
No, it was just one of those terrible sudden deaths. He, you know, as you know, because you've interviewed him over the years, he was in a wheelchair the last 12 and a half years of his life, and that's not easy on anybody. But, you know, that notwithstanding, he was in pretty good physical shape. You know, my brother and his partner had built a really long straight ramp from his house just in the last few months, and my father did sprints on it in his wheelchair. In the summer, he swam laps in his pool, he shadow boxed and lifted weights. I mean, he took relatively good care of himself. So, you know, he was 62, and we didn't know. It was a shock. He got in the shower and had a heart attack and died.
Now, I understand that in his papers, he'd asked that you build his coffin, and you're one of the many things you do is you're a carpenter.
Mm.
What was your reaction when you found that out?
Well, it was not in his will at all. It actually came as my brother and I were busting his chops over, frankly, the last story he'd ever written called Sisters. It's a Western, and in a Western, the hero builds a coffin for a man and digs the grave and does it all in about 3.5 hours. And my father was a master writer, but he'd never work with his hands. And my brother and I have always done this kind of work. And we really gave him grief for that, because there ain't no way you can build a box that can hold a 200-pound man in 3 hours, let alone with hand tools, and then dig a hole around trees with roots. So we really gave him, you know, a lot of heat for that, and we're having fun doing it out on his deck this past summer. And he said, well, when you build my coffin, you can take all the time you want, and I want it to be straight pine. And then we got into the discussion here, and he said, and I want to be buried on my land. And so that was just you know, this past summer, and from busting his chops. And so I was on this book tour for this novel when I heard in San Francisco, and all I wanted to do was get back and hug my children and then go find my brother and build the coffin. And we did. We gathered the lumber store, my brother Jeb and me, and we designed it, you know, through tears. And it was a weird, just such a stark experience. And then bought the wood, spent about an hour picking it out in the lumber yard where we'd been for years on jobs. Went to his shop, and from about 5 at night to 9 in the morning, we built my dad's coffin out of pine. And it was a beautiful night, though, I have to say. You know, it'd be like on a job. You know, we'd say, come on, what kind of a router is that? What kind of a dado is that? Give me your router, let me show you how to do it. And then, there, you know, it'd be this, you know, masculine sparring. And then we'd be hugging each other and crying. And then we'd be ripping a piece of wood on the table saw and laughing and crying. And then there'd be these long moments of stillness and quiet. Over the course of the night, his friends would come by. You know, his longtime agent and friend, Philip Spitzer, and his brother, Michel, came with their family, and they just came and were there and took some pieces of wood with them when they left. And one of my father's priests came by about 3 a.m. and helped us sand. And then some friends came at dawn with beer and sandwiches. We took a break. And when it was finally done, I lay in the coffin and had him shut it so I could feel what it was like. And I was also honestly testing to see if the lid was the right height and there was enough curve to it. And then we dug the grave because we ended up buying a plot of land 1/2 mile from my dad's house, and the farmer who we bought it from said that she hired her hands to dig it by shovel. She didn't have a backhoe. And when we heard that, we said, well, no, we'll be happy to dig it. If anybody's going to be digging this grave by hand, it'll be his son's. And so my brother Jeb and I and our good friend Bill Cantwell, who's like a third son to my father, we dug the grave. And the funny thing is it took 8 hours. So building the coffin with power tools took 2 men, about 12 hours, and digging the grave with 3 men took 8 hours. So the veracity of that detail was off in that story.
So you were right to criticize your father.
Yeah, you need to redo that one.
Did he, by the way, redo it?
No, he didn't. He said, no, well, then there was sand near those roots, and he happened to have the tools. You know, he exercised, you know, he was so far along in the craft. He was such a master. He said, hey, screw it. This is called poetic license. I don't know if he said that, but that's essentially what he did. He just put down the big staff and said, poetic license, move on.
As many of our listeners know, your father lost his legs in a road accident back in 1986. He was helping people who had been hit by a car when he was hit by another oncoming car. I'm wondering how the accident affected your relationship with him.
Well, I think, you know, I'm the second oldest of his six children. I have an older sister, Suzanne, and then me, and then my brother, Jeb, my sister, Nicole, and then my two sisters, Cadence and Madeline, from my father's third marriage. And I think I can speak for all of them, because we've all talked about this, when I say that we all got closer. It's very hard to see anyone in your family suffer, and so that was hard, but not any hard. It was a lot harder for him. So I think the short answer, and I think hopefully the most honest answer, is we got closer in those 13 years, mainly because he was very focused on family in that last decade. Family and writing, I think, for a number of reasons. One, his writing had gotten to the point where he was making a living from it and didn't have to have another job. And he was raising his two young daughters who were still just 16 and 12. And no, that's not completely true. What happened, though, I think, and my father's written about this and talked about it, is something spiritual. He shifted into a higher spiritual gear, which I don't think just anybody would do, suffering a crippling. And consequently, he was a very present, focused father. And I'm just so grateful for all the times we've had in these last almost 13 years. I mean, he really should have been killed in 1986. He was run over at 58 miles an hour. He was standing on the road, got hit at 58 miles an hour. There's a quarter bent in half in his front pocket. So I personally just feel so grateful he was around another 12 and a half years. I want him around another 20. I am not ready for him to be gone, and I miss him terribly. But we had some really, really wonderful talks and family times in the last 12 and a half years.
When your father was alive, did you show each other your writing before it was published?
Yes, we did, absolutely.
And were you honest with each other? You know, it's hard sometimes when you're really close to someone and they give you their work. If there's mm-hmm. something that you don't think works, it could be hard to be honest.
Yeah, you know. It really is hard to be honest. Honestly, there is very little my father gave me of his that I could say anything but, wow, Dad.
Right.
Pretty great. Can I go hide now and curl up in a ball somewhere? They're honestly, out of the 80, 90, I have to count now how many stories he wrote and published. I think it was close to 100 in his lifetime, in his career. There was one little story I didn't like, and I told him right off. And he wrote it on the plane on the way down to a reading, and it read like it to me. And it got up into one of his books, and I said, Dad, that one just doesn't work for me. But he always told me as well. But after a while, I didn't trust him because he was so effusive about my work. He believed in it so much more than I ever believed in my own. And I thought, oh, and also, when I became a father, you know, come on. I want to show people my son's poop. look how cute that little spit is at the corner of his lip. When I became a father, I really stopped believing him. Although it's probably unfair to him, but I thought, come on, he loves me. He's not going to tell me this is a contrived piece of crap I have to write over, you know. But we did. We showed each other after. Over the years, I've been defensive because people have assumed with the same name and having my father as a writer that, you know, he helped me. Well, no, he didn't. He helped me afterwards. If I had a draft done, I'd show it to him and show it to my wife and a couple of friends of mine whose opinion I respected, but my agent. But it was always after the fact. And more so for me, just I've been always been a fairly private, independent little guy. And, you know, a Virgo. So, you know, I never showed him until I was done.
André Debuse III, talking with Terry in 1999. His books include The House of Sand and Fog and The Cage Keeper. More after a break. This is Fresh Air.